Welcome to Decentralize.tv here on Brighteon.com. I'm Mike Adams. We'll be joined by our co-host, Todd Pittner, here in just a second. And the episode today is with the inventor of a peer-to-peer decentralized social media website called Bastion. And we'll show you how to spell that and so on. The inventor is Daniel Sachkov, and he'll be joining us here in just a second. But Todd, welcome to the show. Great to have you with us today.
Thank you. It's always great to be here. I've been playing around with Bastion.com today and really eager for this interview of Daniel.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I can't wait as well. And it's perfect to have him on to talk about SAT123.com. They have put together a really incredible package: emergency backup communication systems, power systems. We've got sat phones, we've got solar panels, and also the big 400 watt solar panel behind us there. And why does this matter? Because of course, right now we are dealing with massive risk of blackouts, and the power grid is just failing, you know, intermittently, but it's going to get worse because we've also got energy shortages. Think about the lack of coal power, the diesel problems that are happening right now. If you're in the military or the National Guard or Border Patrol or law enforcement, and you need to be able to function even when the power grid goes down, or maybe you're a first responder, rescue team, firefighter, paramedic, you name it, you need to know about this equipment. So SAT123.com, folks. Your own government has the power to activate a kill switch on all telecommunications, instantly shutting down all private phone calls and texts. An EMP weapon or solar flare can achieve the same result. Rolling blackouts or permanent power outages will also take out the power supply to cell tower antennas, rendering mobile devices all but useless. During these emergencies, how do you stay in touch with the important people in your life anywhere on the planet? The answer is the Bivy Stick at SAT123.com. The Bivy Stick is a two-way satellite text messaging device that uses a satellite constellation, not cell towers, to send and receive text messages. It works anywhere on planet Earth, including in war zones or blackout areas. In unpredictable times, the Bivy Stick helps you stay connected when it matters most. Visit SAT123.com to get one while they're still available. The world we once knew is collapsing. We're being warned to expect rolling blackouts, and our political leaders are deliberately shutting down pipelines, fuel refineries, nuclear power plants, and energy exploration. The currency is collapsing, while financial assets are plummeting in value, and the global food supply is being deliberately decimated. To survive this war being waged on humanity, you need more than just regular prepping. You need resilient prepping. And that's the title of my new free audiobook, Resilient Prepping. You can download the entire audiobook and a printable PDF transcript for free right now at resilientprepping.com. Resilient Prepping teaches practical strategies for prepping in three layers: high-tech, low-tech, and no-tech. Resilient Prepping is your ultimate guide to surviving the total collapse of the world as we know it, because that's exactly what globalists are trying to achieve. Download this entire audiobook for free right now at resilientprepping.com.
With so much of the world's current food supply consisting of dirty, contaminated, genetically modified foods that may have been grown using herbicides and pesticides, increased scrutiny over what you put in your body is of the utmost importance. Even supposedly organic foods found on most grocery store shelves may contain toxic substances, chemicals, and other additives that can be harmful to your health. That's why here at BrighteonStore.com, we subject all our in-house products to extensive lab testing for glyphosate, heavy metals, and microbiology using our state-of-the-art spectrometry equipment to ensure the highest quality of cleanliness and purity. Support your health and this free speech platform by shopping at BrighteonStore.com today.
On to talk about decentralized social media content, which is something we haven't had yet on this show. So let's bring in Daniel right now. Welcome to Decentralized TV, Daniel. It's great to have you on. It's just welcome. We honor what you're doing.
Thank you so much, Mike. Hi, Todd. It's an honor to be here. I watched a number of your shows, and I actually listened to one of the free audiobooks you had back in the day. So appreciate all the free content you're putting out there. Yeah.
Oh, that's great to hear. Thank you. And I love the fact that you're
very
also
very useful, very practical. I gave it to my wife. She loved it too. So.
Well, we pride ourselves on being practical here. We're all about practical applications of this technology. And thank you for wearing the shirt that shows the spelling of the domain name, because that's going to be people's first question. How do you spell it? So it's Bastyon, bastyon.com. Right. And is that name inspired by the English idiom that sounds similar, like a bastion of free speech?
Yeah, bastion of freedom, of course.
Bastion of freedom.
And in fact, this is an idiom that exists in many languages, not just English. So bastion of freedom is kind of a very... very important. Original name of the project was PocketNet. While I think it says something important about technical side, so we said that it's like internet in your pocket as opposed to you being in somebody else's pocket. But PocketNet was not a catchy name, and we thought long and hard and spoke with the community and came up with Bastyon, which is bastion of free speech, bastion of freedom. I think that really works.
I like it. I like it a lot. Now, Todd, you've been using it for the last couple of days. You're actually ahead of me on this one. So what's your impression just initially here?
Yeah. Well, now that I'm a user, may I first begin, Daniel, presenting my personal pronoun for this interview. So my name is Todd Pittner, and I self-identify as a white hat thanks to Bastyon.com.
I like
Why?
It.
Why? Well, I went through the amazingly easy process of signing up at Bastyon.com, and I chose I'm a white hat as my username. So that is now my personal pronoun. So anybody who wants to go and follow me there, it's I am a white hat. So that's what I am, right? let me share with you what impressed me most. The sign-up process, it was so easy. So first of all, you go and you enter your username. I chose I'm a white hat. Next, you can put your email address in there, but it's optional. I chose not to. Then it says join. And then you go through just one simple CAPTCHA. And then what pops up is follow popular bloggers, of which, shout out SGT Report, Sean, I followed you immediately. And then it goes to the account setup, where you can do absolutely nothing. You cannot upload a picture. You cannot put any personal information about yourself. It doesn't matter. I did upload a picture of a real handsome guy in a white hat, thinking somebody may mistake me for that guy at some point in time. But it was just so easy. And then the cool thing, Mike, just like a crypto wallet, you can go get your private keys and write them down. And so I did. I put them in my little special book that I have of very important keywords for different wallets, et cetera. So at any point in time, I mean, I don't know. This is where I need Daniel to step in. I mean, basically, nobody can censor me. Right, Daniel?
That's right. And so you spoke to a few items, a few aspects of Bastyon. I mean, the first one is pseudonymity, right? Anonymity, pseudonymity, those are the slight distinction. We can get into that. But the point is, in today's environment especially, but almost always, for free speech to exist, there has to be a way to speak pseudonymously or anonymously. In other words, not identify who you are. I think you understand today that all around the world, even, you know, surprisingly in America, very frequently, it is better not to identify who you are. And not only that, but not to connect your social media profile to email or a phone number. This is really important, because if you watch what's going on, right, the latest coming out of UN and organizations like that, they're actually working on a major database that connects all social media platforms, all corporate platforms. Bastyon, by the way, is non-corporate. As I told you, Mike, I'm not a founder, I'm not a CEO, right? You said correctly, I'm an inventor. So I'm kind of a more figurehead, somebody who's speaking about Bastyon, but there's no like control over the network that I exercise or have. But all these corporate platforms, they're connected now, and they're going to be connected more and more. So whenever you're in one platform and you supply your phone number or your email, now everything you do on that platform, even if you don't comment or anything, just the actions, things you watch is going into databases, right? And this is not about scaring people. I'm actually a very positive person. I believe in the end, things will turn out fine. But I think it's very, very foolhardy to believe that, you know, you want to connect your opinions to your personal profile and that's going to be fine. For some people like me, like you, who actually put out our names and speak about it, that's fine. But for many people, there could be repercussions for them speaking their mind.
Well, Daniel,
so Bastion is set up. Yeah.
I've experienced, of course, major repercussions. And just let me share an update here real quick. You know how Nigel Farage was debanked in the UK? And then, of course, Dr. Joseph Mercola, his staff and their family members were banished from JP Morgan Chase. Well, as of last night, my accounts were seized by Robinhood. And so they just seized my account, froze it up, and they said I'm not allowed to contact customer service for 10 days. So no service, no explanation. They say just wait. And by the way, you can't have your money back. So that's a repercussion. That just happened to me. And I believe I'm being targeted because of my speech, exactly to your point.
Yeah, and but with you or me, we at least have an audience. We can go out and many thousands, hundreds of thousands of people will know about this. But for a regular person, they'll be debanked and nobody will know about it. They'll basically have no recourse, right?
True.
Not even, you know, maybe immediate family. That's it. So that's why Bastion is built so that it doesn't take any of your personal information. Whether you do social media, also in Bastion, there is a messenger. There is a nascent new app that's a messenger with text, with phone calls, actually, and it's all peer-to-peer and not connected to your phone number. That's really important because even very admirable platforms that I respect, like Signal, they will still collect your phone number, which I think is a really bad idea.
Right.
Because metadata, right? Even if encryption is very strong, metadata means like who you are, who you talk to, you know, who you like, who you connect to. I think these are serious issues that you need to really protect. You need to keep it protected and private. So Bastion is completely private in that regard. In fact, you can open multiple accounts and it's very easy to switch between. Are barely internet literate that can use Bastion, and that's, you know, they have their private keys, but they know they have a hard time using regular web, but they can use Bastion because it's really easy. So you can run a node and it's all based on nodes and you know, it's permissionless. It's like Bitcoin nodes type of thing. Mm-hmm. But most people don't need to run a node. But Bastion.com also, I have the website here, but very importantly, Bastion.com is not the main Bastion. You can think of Bastion.com as a window from the old web into the Bastion world.
Understood.
But
right.
.com is a censorable thing. It's very easy to shut down a website, exceedingly easy with DNS. You know that, I'm sure your viewers have heard that from you. So if you go to bastion.com/applications or GitHub, you can download an app. When you download an application to your computer, you no longer depend on .com at all. Bastion could be shut down. In fact, much of the internet can be shut down and that application will run. I will give you two examples because they're very important. For in China, we know people in China use Bastion with no VPN. And that is very important because China is the most censored country in the world and kind of the rest of the world is catching up to it, unfortunately. So in China, you can run Bastion application. Now, if you go to bastion.com, it will simply not work in China, you know that. But if you use the application, you don't need the VPN because application uses special protocols to connect directly to the nodes in any part of the world it can reach.
Oh, wow. Okay? Wow. And I see you have the APK for Android here too. So you can install it without using Google Play.
Android is also does the same thing. Android is more censorable in some sense because it's Android. So the least censorable thing, the most robust, you know, indestructible quote unquote thing is the desktop application. Android is kind of next step, a little bit worse. And then of course the web is kind of the most censorable thing.com. They all talk to the node. So it's not an issue of like, nobody's going to shut down 800 computers around the world. I mean, until we have the worldwide tyranny, which I don't think we will, nobody's going to do that. But the problem is they can shut down bastion.com.
Right.
They can do various things. Like for example, remember the events in Kazakhstan, the revolution in Kazakhstan?
Yeah.
About a year and a half ago, actually incidentally a country where I was born and lived until 15 years old. What they did was during these events, they shut down the internet, it seemed like. But they don't really shut down the internet. They shut down all of the DNS and many protocols, but Bastion application worked. We have proof. We have viewers from Kazakhstan who send us videos that they go to every website. Nothing works except state media. And then they go to Bastion application and it actually works. So they were able to get real-time events about what, you know, real-time news about what's going on. So Bastion.com is a window into the old web. You can use it in the meanwhile, but you should be fully prepared that it will be stopped. And then you go to Bastion.com applications now and download the app to the desktop. That way, even if much of the internet is shut down, it is very, very likely that Bastion application will work.
Makes perfect sense. Todd, it's all making perfect sense now.
Right. I mean, right. I have a question, Daniel. Can you download the app to mobile devices?
Yes.
Yeah, there's Android.
An app for Android. You can get it from the Play Store. It was actually banned from the Play Store. Then they brought it back for some reason. I have no idea how long it will last. But there are in Android Play Store, there's close to 200,000 downloads. So it's pretty okay. popular app.
But not in iOS.
An Android app that you can get from our GitHub or from that page I gave you, bastion.com/applications. You can get an Android that is not a Google Play Store Android. It's a direct, so then it becomes pretty much uncensorable too.
Right, right. But no iOS, right? No.
There is an iPhone app.
There is
a long story. Yeah, there is an iPhone app. It's unfortunately very limited because we went back and forth with Apple for years about this app, and of course they didn't want to do it. They kept delaying things and coming up with weird kind of complaints.
They do
and then
that.
We almost gave up. And then they wrote to us that, if you remove some things, we'll allow it. So it's a very limited version, but I feel it was worth it because we can still get people from iPhone into the Bastion world.
We had that conversation with Apple, by the way, on our Natural News app, which was never allowed because they said you have to remove articles that are critical of Satanism.
Wow.
Right. So,
to be quite honest, the iPhone app just got in there recently. So I'm guessing that it probably lasts until the first complaint.
Right.
All right. So, but the bottom line is
because we're not able to remove it. Whether we want to or not, you don't have to trust me. There's just no mechanism, for us to remove it. It's permissionless.
Look, I tell people, number one, don't use iPhone. And also don't use Google Android. Use a de-Googled phone like what I use. I only use de-Googled phones. And in a de-Googled phone, you just install the APK and you have the APK and then it's done. So, but what I love about this, what I'm learning about this, and I should disclose, Daniel, you and I spoke, it was almost like a couple years ago, I think, initially.
It was a while ago, yeah.
It was a while, whatever it was. And I got to admit, at the time, I did not grasp the construct of what you were doing. And now today it actually makes sense, but I think that's only because I've become more educated about the topology of these systems, what is true peer-to-peer, digging a deep dive into this whole subject area. So now I think I can better appreciate what you've built. And it's extraordinary because, as you said, TCP/IP will continue to work even when they shut down domain names and DNS. TCP/IP will work. So your app just uses, I guess, specific ports, right? It's just listening on certain ports in order to pass traffic, right?
That's right. But also in the app, so there, the app, the desktop app especially, is like a Swiss knife of censorship resistance because it uses certain ports to connect to the nodes, but it also has built-in Tor. We took Tor and built
really?
It in. Especially they have a new Snowflake protocol that is quite advanced. So the desktop app is smart enough to know that, it uses a standard method like, let's say, Bitcoin to connect to the nodes. But if that doesn't work, they'll try Tor. If that doesn't work, it'll go to Snowflake. And we keep adding different algorithms to make sure that in the extreme situation or situation of extreme censorship, which I think we're all coming to, that you'll be able to have access to information.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is extraordinary. And let me just give out the website here, bastion.com, BASTION. And here's the applications page that you were speaking of, Daniel. Download Bastion for Windows. And here's Android. Here's iOS, macOS, and Linux downloads. So that's how you really run the app. Or you can
access
it.
That's the best way.
Yeah, this makes perfect sense. Or you can go through...
And from the desktop app, it's very easy to run a node. There's a few clicks
from here.
Wizard that you can run a node.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So before we move on, Todd, do you want to chime in before I ask the next round of questions?
Yeah, I just kind of wouldn't mind rewinding just a bit for those people who just may not have a clue. Could you please, Daniel, give us a little bit of a history lesson? I mean, what was the genesis? What drove you to invent Bastion?
So I have been thinking about, basically, so my background is that I was born in former Soviet Union. I came to the States when I was 15. Then I played sports, and then I worked in finance. So I'm a, you know, out of all things that I do, you can call me like I'm a math geek, right? I do a lot of applied math, and I love math. My father was an engineer inventor. He taught me a lot of it. I just like it. So I worked in finance and didn't really think about those things and was kind of a normie. But then over time, I started realizing more and more that things are going in the wrong direction, because there was one conception of America that I had when I came there. And clearly over time, it became drastically different. And also I worked in risk management, and the risk management taught me a lot of things about thinking things through to their conclusion. So it was around 2015, 2016, especially 2016, where I realized that this is going to end up in severe censorship. And by severe censorship, I don't mean what we have now, right? Okay, when you have a blogger banned here or a blogger, that's horrible. I mean, it's really atrocious, or even debanking of some people. It's very serious censorship. But the censorship I thought about when something clicked in 2015, 2016, I realized that in the end, they're going to ban all dissenting opinions. You know, I read enough Orwell to realize that this is very similar. They're going to ban all of it. More so, I think that they're going to try to control the internet in a much, much more serious and direct way than they do now. For example, trying to make internet user by ID or something like that. So in 2016, when I realized, I started searching for technology to overcome that. Now, in fact, I'm not like most people. I wasn't a Bitcoin fan. Even though I worked in finance, I hate the speculation aspect of it. Like that doesn't.
Yeah, we share that with you. Yeah.
Yeah. And so for the longest time, I refused to participate in it. In fact, like I had a colleague who was a very smart guy, finance guy. He would grab me in 2012, and he would grab me by the hand and say, "Go, let's go buy some Bitcoin." You know, I tell you where you can buy it for, like, you know, forget what it was, but it was like less than $100, I think. And I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. This is not interesting to me. I have a family. I don't want to gamble, and I'm not a gambling person. So that person, by the way, ended up retiring because he bought a lot of Bitcoin. But I don't regret it, because that's not what I'm looking for in life, right? I was successful enough in many things that I do. So, but for the longest time, I didn't care for Bitcoin. I didn't even want to read about it. I was like, this whole thing just like smells bad. But in 2015, 16, I started reading all this stuff by looking for technology. And I realized by reading the Satoshi white paper, as soon as I read it, I was like, this is beautiful, because I love math, and math is like poetry, right? And this is really so beautiful. You could see it right away that it's genius, because you could see that it solves much more than money.
Your own government has the power to activate a kill switch on all telecommunications, instantly shutting down all private phone calls and texts. An EMP weapon or solar flare can achieve the same result. Rolling blackouts or permanent power outages will also take out the power supply to cell tower antennas, rendering mobile devices all but useless. During these emergencies, how do you stay in touch with the important people in your life anywhere on the planet? The answer is the Bivy Stick at SAT123.com. The Bivy Stick is a two-way satellite text messaging device that uses a satellite constellation, not cell towers, to send and receive text messages. It works anywhere on planet Earth, including in war zones or blackout areas. In unpredictable times, the Bivy Stick helps you stay connected when it matters most. Visit SAT123.com to get one while they're still available. The global currency collapse will wipe out the dollar and many other assets, and the only things that will maintain value during the global debt reset are those with intrinsic value that do not require governments, corporations, or markets to make good on their obligations. At the top of this list of intrinsic assets is physical gold and silver. These precious metals have outlasted every failed civilization and government in human history. and they are non-digital, which means they still hold value even if the power grid fails. The Treasure Island Coins and Precious Metals Company is my go-to source for physical precious metals that are delivered securely and discreetly into your hands. Visit BrighteonMetals.com to check their live pricing and in-stock coins and bars. Find out why they are my trusted source for physical metals and why they're the official sponsor of Brighteon.tv. BrighteonMetals.com.
I fortunately, over my career, I led teams of engineers in many different projects, very talented engineers worldwide. Then I had a very good relationship with them and they were like-minded. I found enough top engineers to start building the platform. It took us, you know, since 2016, really, we were building it. This is a long, long haul. And it was very difficult for years because to build a decentralized system is much more complicated to build a Facebook. Facebook you can build in 6 months. But this took 6 years. And so that's, you know, for me, Todd, to answer your question, it was the realization that the end game is something very, very serious where, you know, by that time I had kids already. I was like, I don't want my kids to live in that world. Maybe I'll hide and so on, but I don't want my kids to experience this kind of world where they're basically forced to think certain things and they cannot think for themselves. And so we started building Bastion at that time.
That's amazing.
That's extraordinary.
It's a great story. So I'm always curious, if you don't mind me asking this, Mike, these aren't cheap to build anything like this. How on earth, how did you go about the funding with a totally decentralized project that has no company, has no founder? How?
First of all, think about it this way. Decentralized platform, one of the beauties of it is this doesn't require computers. So you don't need servers because you're at the outset, you said at the outset, the project is that we don't use centralized servers. So whoever wants to run a server. So that becomes the first part. The second part, the most expensive part in all these startups is people. To get high quality people, you know, if you take 100 engineers, there will be not a high chance that even one of them is top quality. It's very hard to come by good engineers, but I had a fortunate background in that I led teams of engineers for many years. And so I've known a lot of them and I know how to tell good from bad. I also know how to inspire them. You know, I will tell you a story. I didn't tell this ever publicly, but these engineers are like me, they're math geeks. They're probably much more geeky than I am even. And so there were very difficult times sometimes because these people work for years without a salary. They have other jobs or they have to make money elsewhere and you have to make them believe in the project, right? And they do believe in it. But there were times when like things wouldn't work, things would break. And I found some ways. One time we're sitting there and I could see they're all down. Right? They're just ready to quit. And I asked them one question. I was like, guys, think about this. When the movie is made about Bastion, which actor do you want to play you?
That's great.
I could see their eyes light up. And the next day, all the problems were fixed and they were just like powering forward. Motivate engineers.
That's inspiring.
That's great. I love it. Okay. Wow. Well, this is truly amazing. I want to ask you now about how you provide revenue for your site and about Pocket Coin. And just start talking about the, you know, your revenue model, the crypto model that's, I think, a layer of this and how all of that works.
So there is no revenue. It's if you're in doubt, think always about Bitcoin because we model the idea of it on Bitcoin. There is no revenue at all. There's no earnings or revenue. The Pocket Coin, which is the cryptocurrency of Bastion, notice that it was PocketNet at Pocket Coin. Now it's Bastion, but Pocket Coin stayed. Pocket Coin is the cryptocurrency of Bastion. And the reason it exists is very, very important. This is not like a side thing. It is critical because of the financial censorship. Pocket Coin is emitted just like a Bitcoin is emitted inside the network. And it provides earnings for authors and for node holders. Mm-hmm. Right now, it's not worth a lot, but it is traded on some exchanges already. but it provides enough earnings for people motivation to run computers, right? For example, I mean, you probably know that in decentralized economies in general, there's a problem called tragedy of the commons. I'm sure you heard of that. So a tragedy of the commons is that most good projects that rely on altruism fail simply because there are always people that will take more than, you know, than they give. That's just, unfortunately, that is the real world. You can have a network of 20, 30 like-minded people that will be very altruistic, but once it becomes big, it's not going to work. So cryptocurrency embedded in Bastion is really important because it incentivizes people to run nodes. It also incentivizes bloggers because part of the emission goes to the nodes, but part of the emission goes to highly rated bloggers.
I see.
So over time, that provides income, and that's really important because blogging is I always thought before Bastion, I was like, this is the easiest thing in the world. But now I know a lot of bloggers and I started doing something myself. I realized it's difficult because you have to prepare. You have to you have to be serious about this. And bloggers cannot have a full-time job and be a good blogger. It's almost impossible because you're a journalist. But I'm talking about good. I'm not talking about OnlyFans. I'm talking about good bloggers. It's very difficult. They need to earn something. So embedded into the Bastion right away was a concept of internal economy that is independent of the bankster kind of, central banking and all that stuff. So Pocket Coin was always meant to be a thing that bloggers can earn, but also it's a token that can be used for advertising. And that's where it closes the loop.
Okay, that was my next question. So it's like an attention token on that side.
Exactly. So you can advertise, and there are advertisers already, not too many, but 50, 60 ads per day are run on Bastion. People come in and they will buy Pocket Coin and they will advertise their products. And none of that goes to Bastion. All of that goes directly to nodes and to creators.
Okay, count us in. Okay, number one, Daniel. So we're going to earn some Pocket Coin. We're going to get all over Bastion with our content. And then I'm going to talk to my marketing team to actually advertise on your platform using your coin. I think that's awesome.
That's a beautiful use.
I love it. Yeah.
One more thing that might interest you or other bloggers that I should mention, that I don't know if you heard of ContentSafe. It's a completely separate platform from us. I just connected with them recently. They work with some bloggers. So they built a very cool thing where you can upload a video and it gets mirrored to many other platforms. So you upload it only once, which I think is a very important thing for bloggers to not spend time uploading to 10 different places. So we're about to release an integration with Bastion where if you upload to Bastion, it's automatically mirrored to BitChute, to Odyssey and Rumble and all these places.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that does sound very useful. Okay, nice.
Is Pocket Coin, is that riding on the Bitcoin blockchain as a token?
It is not on a Bitcoin, it's own blockchain. It is also, but the blockchain is very similar to Bitcoin. So we use Bitcoin code because, with cryptocurrency, one of the things that people don't appreciate, even those people who try to build them, is security. Mm-hmm. When you're a small project, when you're really small, nobody cares about you. You can do whatever you want. As soon as the project starts gathering value, and Pocket Coin does have value because there are many users on Bastion, security becomes really important because there are many, many hackers out there. So we decided not to build our own. We decided to use Bitcoin because it's so well tested. It's so well tested. And the security is very strong, so we took it. However, we made one modification. It doesn't use proof of work. It uses proof of stake. Okay. And I actually watched the Quartal interview. I have to disagree a little bit because proof of stake, first of all, I don't believe there are any other viable algorithms other than proof of work or proof of stake. And I love the Quartal thing. I don't think it's a good idea for decentralized platforms to get into kind of arguments about these things, right? So that's not my goal. But proof of stake is the only algorithm that is viable for a new cryptocurrency today. I will explain why to those even who are not familiar with crypto. Mm-hmm. There is something called hashing power in the proof of work algorithms. So hashing power is the computing power that allows you to basically win money, make blocks in the proof of work blockchain. The thing is, with the advent of Bitcoin and any others, there is so much hashing power in the world. You can go for $5,000, you can rent hashing power, enough hashing power to completely overwhelm and attack in almost any blockchain in the world, except the top ones. So if you're a small blockchain using proof of work, you basically, it takes $5,000 to steal all your money, okay? And so proof of work is not viable because of that. Proof of stake is different because it uses internal tokens, so it's that people have to get. So you can't just go and rent hashing power and go ahead and pretty much like reorganize the blockchain. Reorganize the blockchain means that you can spend the money twice, which means you can steal money. So proof of stake, for security reasons, it's actually a very good algorithm. And I don't want to get into details. You know, I know that stuff very well. There are no other viable algorithms that are secure, okay? Sometimes people say, well, you have to make sure that you give it to humans, right? Like a proof of humanity. Now that would never do. That's dystopic. If you read the new WorldCoin, that white paper, that's what they say. Yeah. You prove your humanity and we give you money. Proving humanity means that you're in a concentration camp, basically, right? That's a code word. Because when you prove humanity, what do? You give up your biometrics.
They want to scan your eyeballs.
Yeah, so in the real world, there is no perfect algorithm. Proof of work has many problems. Proof of stake has many problems. There is no perfect algorithm. It's all about trade-offs. But in the real world, when you have a big network, you need security, right? And the only two secure algorithms are proof of work and proof of stake. So we're using Bitcoin with the proof of stake modification. That's the blockchain that it uses.
Did a hard fork? You did a hard fork of Bitcoin and made that modification?
Well,
it's called a clone. So it's not a fork, but you could say a hard fork, but sometimes it's better to call it modified clone, because hard fork presumes that we took Bitcoin at some point and forked it, but it continued from that point. No, we just took the code, we cloned it, changed it, and then ran it as a separate blockchain.
Okay.
But then the blocks on your blockchain, of course, guarantee the integrity of the content more.
Absolutely.
Rather than But what about the Pocketcoin transactions? Are they also shared on the same blockchain, or is that a parallel blockchain?
It's all same blockchain. It's all the same blockchain. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it secures the integrity of content and the coin transactions as well on the same blockchain?
Yes.
Okay, wow. Well, that's really outstanding. Okay, and then proof of stake. Now, I'm really glad you brought that up, and I'm very much open to what you just said, and I think we can all tell you're a very high IQ individual. You've thought through this deeply. I just want to mention the only thing, my understanding of proof of stake is that in some projects it can tend to make the rich richer, in a sense, because the people with all the money and power gather up all the coins and then they assert governance control over the project.
I'm happy to answer that.
Yeah, please do.
I think because I've done this for a while. So this is not proof of stake or proof of work. In any free economy, there is a tendency for rich to get richer.
True.
And that tendency has to be checked in other ways. Whenever you have more resources, you can always get more resources. The only way around that is communism. I'm not sure that that's like...
No, we don't want that.
Yeah, so I'll explain why. Now I'll substantiate what I said. Yes, proof of stake clearly tends to make rich richer. But let's look at proof of work, right? Bitcoin. Does it tend to make rich richer? Obviously, yes. Because in order to win Bitcoin right now, you need to have ASICs, which are very specialized chips.
Absolutely.
It costs millions of dollars. So you have to have millions of dollars. The more money you have, the more you make. Then the more you make from Bitcoin, the more you invest, and that way you grow, right? So it is rich, get richer. But it's almost any algorithm. Let's say that you come up with an algorithm. I don't want to pick on Cordal because I loved a lot of the things in that interview. I loved the founder. I love the project, right? I just think that to set the record straight, if you have an algorithm where you have some founding members that are allowed to give to 5 or 10 people permission to become nodes as well, okay? And then those can give to more people over time, right? But the founding members, they still, you have to understand that, you know, they may be very ethical, but who controls the second layer of people is ethical? For example, I'm one of the people who got very high in that hierarchy. Now I give 5 permissions to who? To me. I just run 5 versions on one computer, 5 nodes. And then they go, and then those 5 give to other 5. So it is also rich get richer. It's not a function of proof of stake. This is really misleading. And this argument was made a lot, and even though I like Bitcoin, but there are some people, they call Bitcoin maximalists, they will say that there's nothing in the world by Bitcoin. Like, there's, except Bitcoin, nothing exists.
they do write that argument.
Yeah. I think that's, like, for example, I like Monero more than Bitcoin, even though I love Bitcoin. We just couldn't use one. The first version of Bastion PocketNet used Monero, but we couldn't make some of the things with social media work because you can't have complete anonymity like Monero does. Plus, right, the blockchain is a little bit bloated. So
yeah,
the argument that the rich get richer with proof of stake is not true. Well, actually, it's true, but it's just true for any, absolutely any cryptocurrency project. The only project that is not going to be true for is WorldCoin, because there it's like one iris, one coin. But I don't think I want that. I would prefer to work in a world where rich get richer, but there are some mechanisms to limit that, right? For example, in Bitcoin, there are some mechanisms to limit that, and they're not actually, they're not mathematical, they're more social. Remember, for example, when there was a Bitcoin Cash hard fork, right?
Yeah,
sure.
There was a huge debate about why, and then the underlying source of that debate was purely because one side, the side that wanted Bitcoin Cash or wanted the 8 megabyte blocks, they were the rich get richer. They had the most hashing power, they had the most money, and so they wanted to expand that, and the, also 8 megabyte blocks would price out some of the smaller nodes, and they would basically own more of the network, right? So technically speaking, rich get richer, it seemed at the time that the richer, it's going to be like rich get the richest and everybody else is poor. But the community rebelled. What did they do? They had user-activated soft fork. They went with another code base that has that had less hashing power. And that, I think, is misunderstood. That many people will believe that somehow blockchain or cryptocurrency controls for all the social problems. It's like they call it trustless. Nothing in the world is purely trustless, right? Nothing. You have to have some social mechanism. And the social mechanism that's in question is the open source code and ability to fork, which is what you said, Todd, right? So when Bitcoin community realized that the richest trying to take over, they just did basically, because it's open source code, they stayed with the developer team that was true to the principles. And that mechanism keeps check on the rich get richer. Same thing in proof of stake. Like Bastion is very important. It's open sourced and it allows anybody to clone it. So if there was any malfeasance, right, those rich who would want to control the network, they would be left with nothing because people would just fork it. They would say,
right,
here's the Bastion that's true to its principles, go here. And those rich will be left with nothing.
Wow. Okay. All right. This is a really deep discussion, and I want to bring it back for our audience here, just to remind everybody why we're having this discussion too. So, Bastion.com is where you can experience this system through the existing internet domain system with any browser. And the reason this matters, hope you don't mind me summarizing this, but the reason this matters is because on Twitter, you can be censored. I was censored for 4 years. You know, on Facebook, you can be censored. On YouTube, you can be censored. Frankly, on any centralized system, including our own, Brighteon.com, because it's centralized, the potential for censorship always exists, including just government coming along and seizing your servers, right? It doesn't even have to be the corporation. Right. It can be some outside enterprise. So the thing about Bastion is it is a decentralized social media type of system. It looks a lot like Twitter on the screen. It acts a lot like Twitter. But again, there's no corporation behind it. Not even that there's a corporation that says we're not going to censor you, but rather there is no structure for censorship at that corporate level. Now, Daniel, I'm sure there is, you know, each individual user can decide to turn off channels that they don't want to see in case people are putting up, you know, snuff videos or whatever, right? I'm sure that exists.
So there are two very important, of course, you can block. It's very easy, and then you don't see content. But what's important, there are a few things you said. First of all, I think you said a very important thing, Mike, about whether the corporation or the founders say they're going to be for freedom. And that, I think, is where a lot of people are mistaken, unfortunately. The idea of a freedom platform today means that a good guy with some money or a gal creates a platform and promises not to censor, and we all go there.
Right, right. And I don't trust any one person.
Yeah, the problem with that is, look at, for example, Jack Dorsey. Now, I'm not a particular fan, but I think it's hard to argue that he was for free speech for many years. He was a free speech. I mean, at one point,
he banned me.
Sorry?
He banned me. So
that's right. But before that, he said that if there was a free speech wing of the free speech party, Twitter would be it. And I think he believed it at the time. But what he found is that a corporation has shareholders. It has a board.
Right.
So Jack Dorsey had basically not. There's nothing you can do. Same thing with WhatsApp. I don't know if you know them. You know that WhatsApp, right? Yeah. That is the least secure, the most dangerous messenger you could use, in my opinion. Owned by Facebook now, but it was started by Brian Acton, who is a freedom activist. But then, you know, what could he do? There's $19 billion, 19 billion reasons, but also the board. So there's nothing you could do. So it's not. Don't trust when somebody tells you go to a corporate network. Corporation, in my opinion, is not the right structure for any of this. It doesn't have any social responsibility. It will betray you. It will betray you always. Now, as far as on Bastion, yeah, go ahead, Mike.
Well, yeah, but let me just add, and this is really critical. So on Bastion, we don't have to trust you, Daniel, as an individual, exactly. Because you don't have the power to take anybody down. And I have said publicly that my goal is to make Brighton obsolete in its current structure, which is centralized, you know, hosted servers. Ultimately, I want to eliminate that and make it obsolete to take us out of the control loop of what goes on there. But you've already done it with Bastion. That's what's really cool about
what
you've done.
We've worked for many years on this. And yes. As far as like earlier, Todd also said the money, I invested a lot of my own money. I'm successful in many other projects, but also there were other people. I don't know if they want me to name them, but there were a couple of people who came up with serious money to help the project. And one day their names will be known, right? So, but as far as censorship, I want to make a very important point, Mike. I think that the word censorship in itself has to be distinguished from arbitrary censorship. So the two reasons why censorship on like YouTube and Twitter are abhorrent is two, that it's, one, it's not transparent. You don't know how exactly they're censoring. Like sometimes they just block you, so you know.
Right.
But many times they shadow ban you, so you don't know, like that you're actually not getting the reach. Whereas that's impossible with the open source code base. In Bastion, that's impossible. There's no shadow banning because the code is open. Any programmer can see it if it's shadow banning. That's the first thing. But the second thing that's really important to think about philosophically is the arbitrary censorship, because society cannot live without censorship at all. And Bastion has a mechanism of censorship. It is by the community, okay? So there are, but it has very simple terms of service on Bastion. What's not allowed is pornography, including, you know, of course, anything related to pornography. Direct threat of violence are not allowed, and promotion of illegal narcotics. Those things are not allowed. It's very simple terms of service.